Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome, my minions. My name is Tom Marquis. You have stumbled across the very last episode of The Balance. It saddens me to tell you this, but it's true. The very last episode of The Balance has arrived. Why? Because December the 21st is the end of the world, and we are prepared. We are prepared for doomsday, but we are going to take you into doomsday, being completely prepared for all of your sports coverage, from racing to football to basketball, college football, and everything in between, and some beer pong if we can fit it in. This will be the last episode of The Balance. Now, if the world does not end on December the 21st, we will be back again next week, as obviously as we do every week. So guys, without further ado, let's go into doomsday as the very last episode of The Balance begins now.
Welcome to The Balance, the only sports talk show that gives a well-balanced diet of sports. Host Tom Marquis and the gang are ready to break down this week in sports. This is the one place where fanatics can come together and talk about their favorite teams. The Balance brings you an analytical breakdown of sports from a fan's point of view. So sit back and get ready. It's time for The Balance.
Of The Balance could very well be the very last episode of The Balance, as you heard on our opening there. We go into doomsday, December the 21st. The Mayan calendar comes to an end. Oh my goodness. What are we going to do without sports? It's going to be sports in the afterlife. Well, obviously, we're making a joke. It is not the last episode of The Balance. It is just merely an opportunity for me to jump on the Mayan bandwagon. You know, though, unfortunately, things happen sometimes that change the skew of our program. And we want to make sure that we take time to just remember the awful shooting that happened out in Connecticut yesterday. Just a terrible, terrible shooting. Obviously, we're a sports talk show. We don't get into the politics of it. But one thing I can tell you is that there are parents waking up today without their kids. And you don't think about that when you send your kids off to school. And, you know, get your book bag. Let's go. We're running late. Everybody have a good day. And you go about your day to believe that later on in the day that you're going to have another conversation with your child. So take some time this weekend. Squeeze your youngins a little bit tighter and help them realize that, you know, that it's still safe to be a kid here in the United States. So that's, we do want to take time to remember Connecticut shooting and what a terrible, terrible tragedy that has unfolded out there in Newtown, Connecticut. Well, as we go in to doomsday, and it's also right around the corner, is Christmas. Next week, guys, on a programming note, we're going to have the best of, and we always have the best of, because you know why? Because this is the best internet sports talk show out there. Today, we've got another great show, another one for the books. Got a great guest, one of our favorites to have on, Roger Curtis, president of the Michigan International Speedway. He's going to be joining myself and Kitty Barr, who always raises the bar for the show. From Radio Speed Talk, going to be talking about what's going on over there on Radio Speed Talk, as well as what's going on with NASCAR and the future of NASCAR, and of course, Michigan International Speedway, as well College Saturday with Evan Williams and Jimmy the intern. We're going to be breaking down all the college bowl games, plus we're going to get into some college hoops as well. 10 o'clock, Elizabeth the Greek's got her picks. We're going to be breaking those down for you as well, and at 10 o'clock, Jeff Kurtz of Bear Claws. We're going to be talking about the Chicago Bears and also the Indianapolis Colts and how the playoff picture is starting to come together. And right now, the Indianapolis Colts do hold their own destiny. So we're going to talk about that as well. Guys, so, you know, of course, we're going to be talking some NBA and fantasy football huddle as well. So you don't want to go anywhere. I'm telling you right now, you guys want to stick around right here on the Balance Radio Network because, hey, it's Doomsday. It's the last episode of The Balance. We'll be right back.
Happy holidays.
Hi, I'm Mark Timmons of U.S. Water Systems, a family-owned Indiana company that sells water treatment equipment around the world. But we especially know Indiana water because our world headquarters are right here in Indy. You have bad water in your home or business? Whether you're on city or well water, uswatersystems.com makes it easy to solve your water problems. We offer videos, all sorts of water conditioning equipment, and tech support 365 days a year by certified water specialists. U.S. Water has reverse osmosis systems, water softeners, and salt-free water conditioners from $179. Visit us at uswatersystems.com.
Fast Lane Cycles Incorporated, located at 100 Gasoline Alley Suite D in Indianapolis, specializes in quality performance for your bike. A distributor for all major suppliers, we can do everything from service and motor work to customizations and insurance estimates. Give us a call at 317-247-8088. Fast Lane Cycles Incorporated at 317-247-8088.
199 left, and baby, it all comes down to this.
Your talk show for NASCAR.
Yeah, now that's what I'm talking about.
The Balance Online.
Fuel, give me fire, give me that which I desire. Ooh.
All right, my minions, welcome back to The Balance on the Balance Radio Network. It is Saturday morning, so glad that you guys could join us here on the final episode as we approach Doomsday at full speed ahead. But one good thing before we do get to Doomsday, we got Mr. Kenny Barr always raising the bar for us here from Radio Speed Talk. And also joining us is Roger Curtis, president of Michigan International Speedway. We'll start with you, Kenny. Kenny, how are you doing today, sir? Are you all ready for Christmas?
I'm doing great, and, you know, have you bought my Christmas present yet, or are you waiting until the day after Doomsday to start shopping?
I'm waiting until the day after Doomsday to start shopping. Also joining us is another favorite of the show. Welcome back to The Balance, Roger Curtis, president of Michigan International Speedway. How are we doing, sir?
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
Hey, it's good to have you. It's always good. We don't know whether to call you a Michigan guy or a Hoosier. But we do know that you're from Indiana, so we're still going to lay claims to you being the Hoosier that you are. Well, guys, we do want to get on into this. Obviously, we're making jokes about Doomsday. This isn't the last episode of The Balance, in case some of our minions are just waking up. What? This is the last episode of The Balance? No, we're just making jokes about Doomsday. But one thing I do want to get you guys' thoughts on, and we'll go around the clock here real quick, and then we'll get into our conversation. Obviously, no joking matter is what happened in Connecticut yesterday. And I want to start with you, Roger. This was not a planned question, so I apologize for this not being on your question list. But you have the awesome responsibility of having a huge NASCAR event at your track. And obviously, we look at situations that happened yesterday out in Connecticut, and a terrible, terrible tragedy that is. What are some of the things that NASCAR works with you, the racetrack, what are some of the things that you guys do, maybe that you can tell us or not tell us, that if something like that was to happen, let's face it, there's thousands of people there. If somebody really wanted to come in there and do damage, and we've heard the buzzword active shooter over the last 24 hours, do you guys have procedures in place for that, and have you guys trained for that?
Yeah, and I'm going to start, like everyone, and our thoughts and prayers are really sincerely. Those of us who are moms and dads, just a terrible event yesterday in Connecticut, and I don't care whether you physically know those people or not, just like I said, being a mom or dad, our hearts go out to all of them, and I think it brought tears to all of us at some point yesterday. So you obviously hope you never, ever have any kind of emergency situation, but you always have to be prepared. And it's not just something like that. It's weather-related issues. It's storms. It could be any number of things that you need to be prepared for. And so we're always coordinated with certainly NASCAR, but they kind of come into us. We have our own. Each track has their own emergency action plan, and they work with state and federal authorities. We have an operating emergency operations center where there is a representative from everyone from the FBI, the National Weather Service, state and local authorities, our racetrack, NASCAR, fire, rescue, all centrally located so that they can take and respond to any issues that come up. So, and you do drills throughout the year. We do at least one major drill a year and run through a different scenario and see how we would respond and work through kind of a shop like that. So, you know, you hope you never, ever, ever, ever have to use it. But even on a small scale, we did have a storm come through, I think it was two or three races ago, and we had to cancel the concert. And on a very, very small level, it was kind of a good practice for us, and everything worked. But hopefully we never have to activate any of that.
And I hope not either as well. Kenny, do you have any comments on the Connecticut shooting or any questions for Roger on this topic, and we'll move on into our topic at hand?
Well, yeah, I got a ton of comments on the Connecticut shooting, but I'm going to keep most of them to myself. One thing I think, though, that NASCAR fans are salt-of-the-earth people. They're hard-working, blue-collar people. And if some wacko decided to cut loose at any one of the NASCAR tracks, I don't think they get more than about 10 feet before, I don't know if I want to use the term vigilante justice, but I think some people would take matters into their own hands and get that handled in a great big hurry. And the Rogers crew wouldn't have to do anything with them except help subdue them and haul them off if they're still alive.
You're probably right about that. Well, we do want to brighten the topic matter here, and we just want to send our thoughts and prayers out to everybody. And like I said, make sure that you guys hug your youngins a little bit tighter and just, you know, help them understand. You know, even though they may not have been at that school, obviously they're watching the news coverage, and it's hard to miss. So certainly, you know, we realize what has happened here, and the unfortunate thing is it's probably something that will happen again, but hopefully we've got a while before that happens again. Well, let's talk about some NASCAR. Roger, I know you were out at the NASCAR Awards Ceremony, and I know the old saying is what happens in Vegas stays in Vegas, and it makes for some great television. Well, not really some great television, but certainly some great conversations. So talk to us a little bit about the awards banquet, about being out there with NASCAR, and talk to us about that in itself and any fun stories that you want to tell us about some of our favorite drivers.
Well, it was just a great time. I mean, the whole situation, scene in Las Vegas is so different than New York. I mean, New York was special, too, at Christmas time, but we're so much more welcomed in Las Vegas, and it's just such a different atmosphere. Everything is laid back. Like you said, what happens there stays there. And it just, everyone seems at ease, much more at ease, from Mike Helton all the way down to the drivers to the fans. I mean, there's a lot more fans that are involved in all the ongoings out in Las Vegas than they were in New York. And so the after the lap that they started out there, where the drivers, quite frankly, have a few drinks before they go on stage and do a Q&A, is absolutely hilarious. I mean, to see Jeff Gordon break dance, and Clint Boyer is always a riot, whether he's had a beer or not. But it was
well,
just
we
great
saw
to
that
see
he
them.
Calls a riot. Oh, I'm sorry to interrupt you, Roger. Go ahead. I was going to say,
no,
we know very well that Clint Boyer is capable of causing a riot, but go right ahead.
Well, I was shocked. You know, that was one of the things that came out of Vegas. I thought, you know, season's over, everyone's having a couple drinks, having a good time. The situation between Jeff and Clint has not cleared up. I think Jeff is ready to break bread and smoke him peace pipe, but Clint is not. Not at all. So that's something that's going to carry over that fans need to watch for. Clint's got a long memory like an elephant, I think, and it's not going to be at Daytona probably, and who knows when it's going to happen, but something's going to happen in the 2013 season. Clint's going to get some sort of revenge, I'm sure of that.
So we didn't see out on the strip, fight. Boyer and Gordon going at it. Meet me out on the strip. Meet me out behind the MGM Grand.
Yeah. Yeah, I thought we could do a boxing ring and get the two of them in there. But like I said, Jeff seemed to want to talk about it and be done with it. But I think Clint realizes now, as close as things ended up in Miami, that cost him a real shot at the championship. And I think over the winter he'll ease a little bit. But, these guys, they have long memories, like I said. But it was just great out there to see Brad Keselowski, a Michigander, a Midwesterner, like you guys were saying, blue-collar, hardworking. Certainly did not have a silver spoon in his mouth when he was born. Hardworking family. They mortgaged the house a couple times to keep him racing. Worked his way up the hard way on the short tracks, working on his own car. And I just love the way that, he's taken command of his career and walked into Roger Penske's office a few years ago and said, "Hey, I'm going to win you a championship." And he wasn't even in cup racing or in NASCAR racing at the time. And so to see his star just rise, I mean, just like a meteoric rise through the ranks is just great. And he's still Brad. He's just Brad. I mean, everyone was like, "Oh my gosh, look at him drinking Miami and having the beer and doing this." But he knew exactly what he was saying. He was not drunk. I'm sure he was tipsy, but that's Brad, whether he's going off in Phoenix and expressing his views when he was very angry or drinking a beer live on ESPN, you still get the genuine Brad Keselowski. That's him.
Hey, Kenny, we've joined now with Kenny Barr of Radio Speed Talk as well, and we're kind of doing a joint interview. We're ganging up on you, Roger, here, so we're interviewing you for two separate shows. So, Kenny, go right ahead.
Hi, Roger. How's life treating you?
Life is great. It's been an awesome year, and there is no off season, but what we call off season is been really good.
Well, that kind of leads me right into a couple of questions. There's some really cool things that you and your staff at MIS do during the off season. I was going to let you tout them a little bit. I will admit that I am cheating and I'm surfing around on the Michigan International Speedway app that I really love, and it's just terrific thing. If fans got an iPhone or a smartphone, they need to get that app. But the racetrack has done some really neat things about a track and toys drive, and they also gave some trees to a Michigan City was devastated by a tornado. Why don't you tell everybody about that and some of the cool things you do in the off season?
Well, thank you. You know, we're part of the community, and we love. I mean, this whole team. I got the best team in motorsports up here, and we absolutely love our jobs, and we love where we live, and we love our fans. And we've tried very hard to give back in every way possible because we're very, very blessed to have the jobs that we do. And MIS Cares gave away a lot of money this year. I think it was getting up in the $600,000, I think. And then our signature Fisher Bass Off event raised a record amount of money this year with Ryan Newman and Kevin Van Dam and Mark Zona coming in. And then we did the toy drive where fans can come out and they got to take their own car out on the track and do some laps and pretend like they were Jeff Gordon or Tony Stewart or whoever, and all they had to do was drop off a toy. And then we did the trees, as you mentioned, for Dexter, Michigan, that had just – they lost some just beautiful, magnificent old oak and maple trees. And so it's going to take years to replace for these trees to grow. But we sent them about 100 trees, I think it was, and got them planted up there. So – we've been hard at work doing those things, renewals. I got to tell you, not to get into the business side of things, but I'm so excited for our fans. They obviously loved the racing last year. It was two of the best races in NASCAR, and it really shows with that and the repave and all the work that we've done with our guest services, building our guest relations, fixing our traffic issues, investing almost $70 million into the facility to upgrade it for fans. And renewals are up for the first time since 2003. So really, really good news on that front, too. So I'm obviously very excited as we take a break for the holidays and then actually get ready for Speed Weeks very, very quickly.
I have another question, and I'm glad you mentioned the track resurface, because I've been thinking about that here since I found out you were going to be a guest. I know that some of the road, the normal highway crews have a
chemical they put down on the highways now in anticipation of really rotten bad weather. And since this is the first, well, I guess this is the second winter, but we had such a mild winter last year, it didn't get super duper cold around here. Are you doing or planning on doing anything special to the crack surface to keep it from curing too fast or changing? Because now you're the fastest oval cracking to keep it anyway. And I didn't know if you just let Mother Nature do her thing or if you guys did something to the surface to protect it a little bit from the lousy weather.
Yeah, we will do it the first year. We put down a sealer that was just kind of the pavement chemist, scientist, engineers told us it was a good thing to do in year one. We're also incredibly protective of any oil or fuel spills on the track. So we, even when we have driving schools up here, we're on standby. We've had some other racing activities during the off season as well. We've paved our infield road course, so we've had a lot of sports car guys, Michigan Karting Association, World Karting Association, been out, and all of them, if they spill anything, if they drop their Gatorade bottle, we're out there to wash it down because we're very, very protective of that $8 million investment and how well it performed for the drivers and the great work that Goodyear did. So the racing was great. The fans, we do just tremendous amounts of surveys with our fans besides us camping out there and sitting in the stands with them and hanging out all weekend, which I love to do. But we do formal surveys too, and the ratings that we got for the race itself were just off the charts. So the drivers loved it, the fans obviously loved it, and we're going to do all that we can to protect it. I don't know that we'll do any sealing after this year. For some reason, it was just something the engineers thought we really needed to do in year one, but we certainly will continue to wash off stuff and protect it.
Well, we're talking with Roger Curtis, president of Michigan International Speedway, here on The Balance, and it's certainly one of our favorite guests to have on with us. And I love your track. We had an opportunity to go up there this past year and do our show from there. We had a great time. Spent the night in Ann Arbor, had a great time there, which we won't talk about now, but we did have a great time with a lot of NASCAR fans, let me tell you that. But I love your facility. What a great facility it is. The only thing that I know, you guys have worked on the traffic, you've worked on the parking, you've worked on the facility, but the issue that I had the most issue with was the rain, the freaking rain all day long. Although the food was good inside the media center, so I'm not going to complain about that, but I'm just wondering, have you guys got together with your weather experts to fix that issue for next year?
You know, it was a two-wheel. We ended up with a two-hour delay, so don't say it rained all day. We got the race in, so, and the good, you know, I got to say this, it was blazing hot up here last year. I mean, everywhere. We're in the Midwest, as you know. We had a drought. It was in the 90s. And for both races, it was magical. Like the week of the race, those 90-degree temperatures broke, and we had, you know, upper 70s, lower 80s both weekends. And that was just fantastic. So I'll take a two-hour rain delay for those low temperatures for all of our campers and fans in the grandstands any day, because that was – that would have been a toasty one. It would have been like, you know, firecracker 400 kind of weather if the weather hadn't broke there for us. But it was a great year. I got to say, and I don't say this every year, but the 2012 races were probably my two favorite. And I don't mean just the 400 miles, but the whole weekend. The fans were absolutely fantastic. I was out in the campgrounds more than I probably ever was. We had a lot of Canadian fans. We had a lot of great Hoosier fans. I mean, a ton from Indianapolis and Fort Wayne in particular coming up. And even my hometown of Terre Haute saw some growth in that market. So if any of those Sycamores are listening, we welcome them as well. So it was a really great atmosphere this year. And we've really turned and worked hard with the fans' help. I mean, they make it special. It's them. Turned it more into a festival than just a race. And that seems to be making people really excited about coming back, and I know it gets me all pumped up for June and August already.
Well, absolutely. We're looking forward to being up there again this year, and obviously a great win for Dale Earnhardt Jr. Real quickly, going into the look at the new cars in 2013, what are some of the things that you guys are looking at for that as far as the track aspects? And obviously, as Kenny's already pointed out, you guys have the fastest track in the Midwest, as Marcus Ambrose had the opportunity to experience. And I thought maybe I was at an IndyCar race there for a little bit, especially during practice laps. It's, so do you think that the new car and your track, that will continue?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I mean, it just if Goodyear continues to do the great job, and they're the most unsung heroes in this sport, I just have to add that, because they walk such a thin line between, quote-unquote, a bad tire and a good tire, and they get no credit when they do a great job, and they get called out when, when the tire's not right. So they did an awesome job for us, both races. Even when we had to ship in, they had to ship in the other tires there in June because of some blistering issues, but they got it right. They did a fantastic job. August was perfect, and I don't see anything changing. I still see us being the fastest track in NASCAR. Probably you're still looking at 215 going into turn one, average lap speed probably right around 200. I don't think it's going to be what Marcus Ambrose did back in June. They didn't do that in August either, but it's still going to be fast. And the great thing, what really surprises me, guys, is the racing groove changed to really make it like two lanes. And everyone, I was really worried, oh, my gosh, we're not going to have this four or five wide racing that we're used to and we're kind of known for, the wide track at MIS. But that actually improved the racing, because the drivers couldn't use as many lines as they wanted to, and they were forced to use the two lines. And everyone's most of the conventional wisdom is that that's bad, but it's actually good, because it kept them bunched up. They couldn't go where they really wanted to. And the passing, I thought, was much, much better. I mean, you really had to have some kahunas and really think it through when and where and how you were going to make your pass. And I think these Midwestern race fans, they understand racing a lot more than maybe some other people in the country, and they love that. That's real racing to them, and nothing against the restrictor plate tracks where you artificially keep them together. I love those too. They're very exciting, but our races were real races, and they were real fast, and that's what I love as a fan.
And, Kenny, we're going to let you have the last question for this segment, and then we're going to have to move on to college football Saturday. We do want to get your pick for the Purdue Bowl before you go there, Roger. But go ahead, Kenny. We'll let you have the last question.
So I mentioned IndyCar, and I had forgotten all about this till he happened to throw that in the conversation a bit. Well, IndyCar had that gap in the schedule, and MIS was talked about filling the date a little bit. Now, when I was a young man, I remember going up there watching an IndyCar / NASCAR show the same day. I think they both ran 200 laps that day. Did the IndyCar folks get a hold of you, or are you entertaining any type of bringing open-wheel cars back to the Speedway?
We did. We spoke to them. We called each other throughout the summer. There was even a period where they were talking about having their finale in 2012 at MIS, but you know, the logistics and operations of trying to get that done just didn't work out. So we did continue the conversations for 13. It's not going to work out for 13, unfortunately. I just think that the financial model for both of us, it's getting closer. It's getting closer to making sense for us. It's not quite where it needs to be. I think it's probably something you'll probably see an open-wheel race sooner than later at MIS. It's not going to be 13, and I can't even promise it'll be 14. But the dialogue's there, and they obviously had a terrific race at Auto Club Speedway and very similar track to us. They always put on probably one of the best, if not the best race in the country at MIS when they were here under, I don't care what banner it was, USAC, CART, IRL, whatever. It was still the best race, in my opinion, in the country. Up here every summer. So as a fan, I would love to have him back. As the business track president, we still need to make sure that financially it makes sense and for them as well as us, and that we both can be happy with the structure of the agreement. So we're getting closer, and we'll continue to talk. Hopefully they will have an unbelievably successful 2013. And some more sponsors will come on board. Hopefully they get to a point where they have a good TV package. And I think that will change the dynamic for them tremendously. But certainly we're going to stay in touch. There's no animosity there. There's no bad blood between us and Indianapolis. Definitely would like to see them up here someday.
Well, real quickly, before we let you go, obviously we know you're a Boilermaker fan. They didn't quite have the season that they had hoped for. But we look at them going forward to Dallas, to the Dallas Bowl, starting the new year off with a brand-new coach. We thought maybe they would hold on to Coach Hope, but apparently there was no hope for Hope. So new head coach Darryl Hazel, and going into the Dallas Bowl, what are your thoughts on Purdue? And should I ask who your prediction is?
Well, I'm going to go with Purdue. I mean, I like the new coach. I think the players are going to rally around that new culture, new environment. You know, let's need to get a winning attitude in there. It's going to take a while to build that program. It takes a while to build any program, as you guys know. I mean, all these universities think you can go out and hire a big-name coach or whatever, and they're going to be a miracle worker. But, you know, recruiting, it's not like pro sports where you can just go out and buy and sell and trade, you know, and you got to recruit and you got to get down in the trenches and go get these kids and convince them that your program's something worthwhile. So, but I think the Dallas Bowl, we're going to see Purdue squeak it out.
So next June when we're out there in Michigan, are we going to see Roger doing this on the big screen?
You never know. You know, I married a couple. I got ordained so I could marry some people I met on Twitter. I dressed up like Elvis and played cornhole in the infield. So don't challenge me. I may do it.
Hey, man, I think the challenge is on. Roger Curtis doing the Gangheim on the big screen right before the NASCAR race, right before driver introductions.
Hey, it's all about having fun with the fans, because that's what it's about. That's why you go to the races, to create memories and have fun.
Absolutely, Roger. Well, you're always welcome here on The Balance, and I know that you love your social media, so where can people find you all over social media world?
MIS Roger is my Twitter handle, and then MI Speedway, you can follow the whole track there, but MIS Roger for me. And if you have any questions, detailed questions, ask the president at MISpeedway.com. Ask the president at MISpeedway.com. I answer all questions, and 800-354-1010. If you want to come up and see us next summer, we'd love to have you.
Well, I wish all presidents had the same philosophy. Well, Roger, we're going to let you go, and we wish you a very Merry Christmas, sir.
Same to you. Have a Happy New Year, and I'm sure we'll be talking before Speed Week.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Roger Curtis, president of the Michigan International Speedway, so glad that he took some time out of his extremely busy schedule to join us and talk to us a little bit about what's going on with NASCAR in the upcoming 2013 season. Well, we've got to take a break. We've got to come back. We're going to jump into college football Saturday. Kenny, are you going to hang around or you got to go?
Got to go today. Got some plans. Got some things going on at work. Got to do a little research for Radio Speed Talk.
All right. Sounds good. Well, where can people find Mr. Kenny Barr at, sir?
Well, on a weekly basis, you can find us at RadioSpeedTalk.com. And I hang around on Twitter at KennyBarr52. And then if you're in the Fort Wayne area and you can see some basketball, you might hear my voice doing a little play-by-play on a local basis here.
Well, that sounds like a plan. Well, Kenny Barr, RadioSpeedTalk.com. We're going to take a break. When we get back, we're going to jump into college Saturday. We're going to be talking some college hoops as well as the bowl games up and coming on the bowl games, and maybe talk about some of the ones that we did not get to. Guys, you're listening to The Balance of the Balance Radio Network. My minions, don't go too far, because this is the last episode, because doomsday is right around the corner.
Open Gangnam Style.
Hi, I'm Mark Timmons of U.S. Water Systems, a family-owned Indiana company that sells water treatment equipment around the world. But we especially know Indiana water because our world headquarters are right here in Indy. You have bad water in your home or business? Whether you're on city or well water, uswatersystems.com makes it easy to solve your water problems. We offer videos, all sorts of water conditioning equipment, and tech support 365 days a year by certified water specialists. U.S. Water has reverse osmosis systems, water softeners, and salt-free water conditioners from $179. Visit us at uswatersystems.com.
Fast Lane Cycles Incorporated, located at 100 Gasoline Alley Suite D in Indianapolis, specializes in quality performance for your bike. A distributor for all major suppliers, we can do everything from service and motor work to customizations and insurance estimates. Give us a call at 317-247-8088. Fast Lane Cycles Incorporated at 317-247-8088.
Over the course of history, there have been many great revolutions. The French Revolution, the American Revolution, the Cuban Revolution, and now in 2012, there's a brand new revolution for the fan revolution, IndyProSports.com. That's IndyProSports.com. IndyProSports is for the serious Indiana fan who roots for the Colts, the Pacers, the Indians, and so much more. Make sure you check out IndyProSports.com. Be a part of the revolution on Twitter, Pro Indy, and on Facebook, Indy Pro Sports.
The season of receiving. I hope I don't receive coal in my underwear this year.
Radio Network. My name is Tom Marquis, El Presidente. So glad that you guys could jump on board with us on a Saturday. It is the Saturday before Doomsday, and this is the last episode of The Balance, If the World Ends. So joining us now is Mr. Jimmy the Intern from Indiana University, going to help us break down today's college action. Obviously, we're going to talk about some of the bowl games we want to get into, as well as some of the college hoops that's going on as well. Standing by also waiting for we're waiting for him to get with us is Mr. Evan Williams of Purdue University. But we do have one of the two with us, and that's Mr. Jimmy the Intern. Jimmy, how are we doing, sir?
Not too bad, Tom. Ready to go.
Are you ready for Doomsday?
Oh, I've had that date circled for a long time, Tom. It's been a long time coming, and you know, sometimes you got to be able to accept the inevitable.
It's going to happen, man. It's going to happen. So I just want you to know, next week, guys, because it's Christmas and it's Doomsday, we're doing a best of. So if we happen to make it to the following Saturday, we'll be back on the air. But this could very well be the last broadcast of the balance because of Doomsday. Obviously, we're making jokes about that. We have to jump on the Mayan bandwagon as well. And as we mentioned in the first segment, certainly no joking around out in Connecticut. Our thoughts and prayers go out to the families of the children that are lost there. Again, as we talked about in the first half hour, you know, take some time and hug your children a little bit tighter. Certainly a tragedy that no one plans for or expects. Jimmy, I want to talk with you this. Again, we're kind of off skewed a little bit just because of what happened there, but I do want to kind of incorporate it into our show today. Now, I know that you are a student out of Indiana University. From the students' aspect, we look at what happened with Virginia Tech. Are there drills? Are there practices? Are there things that they – and you work in the student radio media, so you may be a little bit more familiar with the processes, and I know that IU has, like a lot of colleges, has an automatic texting type situation. But we've heard that buzzword, active shooter, going around. And we look at what happened at Virginia Tech, and we just compare that to college campuses around the world. What does IU students know what to do in the event of something like that, of that tragedy happening?
Well, they send out text messages, which is something, but I mean, I honestly can't say it's something that enters my mind on a daily basis. It's something that's so totally outside of the ordinary. And, you know, quite honestly, if something like that was to happen down where I am, the best thing I would know how to do was basically make peace with my creator and get ready to go, because just the way things happened there and the way things happened in so many different places across the country, the way it happened at Virginia Tech, the way it happened at Columbine several years ago. I read something, Tom, that really astounded me. that 31 school shootings have happened since Columbine in the United States, and the rest of the world has had 14. It's a sad state of affairs that way.
Well, and absolutely, and you know, you don't really think about a lot of things until it happens, and you then, unfortunately, you know, I was in the military, my son's in the military. I talked to my son last night about it, and he says, "Yeah, you're trained for it. You're prepared for it." But situations in the military, they know what to do. They're prepared for it. That's what they do. Police officers are prepared for it. Students and young students and perhaps people, and you look at what happened out in Vegas last night, they're not prepared for it. They're not trained for it. So you have to prepare the best that you can. And you know, you don't want to live in fear, but you certainly want to be prepared. So our thoughts and prayer do go out to everybody out in Connecticut. And we just it's unfortunate and a tragedy that happened this close to Christmas. Well, we do want to get into these bowl games. We didn't get a chance to get into all of them last week. Obviously, we're talking about the Army-Navy game, and boy, Navy pulled one out. What a disappointing loss for Army real quick there, Jimmy.
Yeah, it was a disappointing loss. It was a game they should have had a shot to win, and it seems like Navy just has Army's number. It was a close game. Navy pulled it out, and you had to feel bad for Army for coming so close, still not being able to get it done.
Well, I want to get into some of these bowl games. Obviously, there's a lot of them, and you know, as we do know that if you have a hard time finding a bowl game to watch over the next week and a half, you just probably don't have your TV on. I guess that's what I'm saying. So I don't want to go through every single one of these bowl games, but obviously we do want to talk about Purdue. Obviously playing on January 1st in the Heart of Dallas Bowl against Oklahoma State. Obviously Oklahoma State is a tough opponent for Purdue. And we look at Purdue. Let's talk about this real quick. Jimmy, and you and I talked about this out at the IU-Purdue game. After that win, we still said that Coach Hope, there's no hope for Hope, and that obviously was the truth. But we thought that it was going to be – they were going to wait till after the bowl game for that to happen. What kind of signal should we read into, or should we be reading anything into Purdue dismissing Coach Hope before the bowl game? And obviously a new coach, I think he's got a lot of talent. You know, certainly wasn't on my top radar of picks, but they do have a new coach with Daryl Hazel. So talk to us about that coaching change, and how do you think that's going to affect this Purdue Boilermaker team in this contest?
Well, it gave you the indication that Purdue was ready to move forward as quickly as possible. They found their man in Daryl Hazel. I'm not totally sure he was their number one priority coming into the coaching search. They talked to Butch Jones. They talked to a few other people. But Morgan Burke insisted at the press conference that Daryl Hazel was a guy they circled on their list, one of the guys on top. Apparently, it was a really short search. They found the guy they wanted, and they paid him quite handsomely. He's making more than Kevin Wilson is. He's still going to have something to overcome with the recruiting budget, but he had a very impressive season this year at Kent State. He doesn't have a whole lot of head coaching experience, so he's a bit of an unproven commodity. I was not 100% sold on the hire, but I've talked to a lot of Purdue fans. They really like it. And if they like the hire, I'm going to imagine that he at least is going to move the program in a direction better than that Danny Hope did.
Well, let's talk about the Dallas Bowl here, Purdue and Oklahoma. What are the key things that have to come together for Purdue to win this bowl game and Oklahoma as well? What are some of the things we're going to see when we watch this game on New Year's Day?
Well, the main thing for Oklahoma is being able to avoid turnovers, avoid costly plays. We saw against Notre Dame earlier in the season that Landry Jones is very interception-prone. He's prone to making decisions that are not best for his team. He's done that throughout his career. than his main target, Kenny Stills. If they can shut him down, I think Texas A&M is going to have a good chance of this one. Most likely, it's going to be a shootout, Johnny Football versus the Oklahoma offense. Yeah, I generally like what I've seen from Texas A&M. I think they have been a bit overrated this year just in terms of what Johnny Football has brought to the table. I don't think he's done anything revolutionary. I think Kevin Sumlin has been the guy to really look at and say he's been the guy that's made this offense click. There's going to be a lot of points put up on the scoreboard.
Absolutely. Are you still with us there? Oh, okay. I thought I lost you there for a second. There was an abrupt end there. Well, let's look at Purdue's squad here. We looked at how they played against IU. And you know, IU played a good game. And we'll say we played a good first half, but it just kind of got away from them. I think Oklahoma is a very, very good ball club. I think that they have an opportunity to win this. So when you look at Oklahoma's track record, I guess, to getting to this bowl game, and you look at Purdue's, certainly it skews much more in the favor of Oklahoma. It's going to be a struggle for Purdue in this game. So what does Purdue have to do to overcome an extremely good Oklahoma team?
Hold on, time out. One second. I don't think Purdue is playing Oklahoma in the bowl game.
Did I say Oklahoma?
Yes. Oklahoma State. Okay.
Oklahoma State. I'm sorry. I apologize. You're right.
Okay.
Moving on. We digress.
We are on the same page once again. I like this.
Well,
I
had the state right, and I'm glancing through my spreadsheet of bowl games. You know, so you got Oklahoma and you got Oklahoma State. Okay, Purdue versus Oklahoma State. Okay, not quite as good as Oklahoma, but let's just still say that Purdue, it still skews in the favor of Oklahoma State, which was in my notes, by the way. So I did read that from my notes. What does Purdue have to do to overcome the obstacles and challenges that Oklahoma State's going to provide for them?
Okay. Mainly they're going to have to shut down the rushing attack because Joseph Randall's one of the best running backs in the country, and really Purdue's run defense has not been great this year. We saw Stephen Houston in person tear them apart when IU came to play the bucket game. They haven't had the same passing attack as consistently as they've had throughout the years. They don't have Zach Robinson. They don't have Brandon Whedon from last year. They've kind of been up in the air. It's been both J.W. Walsh and Clint Schelf, I believe is the pronunciation. I'm not as familiar with his work. He's been the guy who's been filling in at the very end of the season. He's got 12 touchdowns, 6 picks. He hasn't been the most consistent of players. So Purdue will have that advantage. They don't have an overly established quarterback. But, you know, then again, Purdue doesn't have an overly established defense. I wouldn't expect a whole lot in the bowl game out of them. You know, you're going to get what you're going to get with Purdue because the new coach is not going to coach the bowl game. But that said, I think the future is a lot brighter for this team.
Well, let's look at another Big Ten, obviously, bowl game appearance. And let's look at the Outback Bowl. And we look at Michigan versus South Carolina. Both very good squads. I like Michigan in this game. I think they have a very good opportunity to beat South Carolina in this. Let's take a look at that game, the Outback Bowl in Tampa, Florida. Break that game down for us there, Jimmy.
Well, Michigan, I'm not sure how much I buy what they've been able to do this year. They do have some pretty good signs across the ball on the offensive side because their brand-new quarterback in Denard Robinson's absence has really stepped up and done a great job. Devin Gardner has shown himself to be a playmaker, and Denard Robinson has gone into the backfield and done a pretty good running back. Yeah, that said, I'm not sure about their defense. And then again, South Carolina doesn't have Marcus Lattimore. They don't have the same ability to make a team pay on the offensive side of the ball. But at the same time, South Carolina was one of the best teams in the SEC this year. the Big Ten. There's no question it was down this season. Michigan would have a great opportunity to validate a lot of what the Big Ten did this year with a win over South Carolina, one of the best teams in the SEC. But I'm not sure that's in the cards.
Well, and you might be absolutely right. Obviously, all of the Vegas backers and bookies are saying that this is a game-caught game all the way. And that's a phrase you don't want to say too fast, but a game-caught game. He said game-caught. Dude, I need help, brother. I need you or Evan to keep me in line. I'm not sure. Well, but obviously the Gamecocks, said it one more time, will be playing without running back Marcus Lattimore. How big of a potential damage is that to this game?
Well, there's no question. Marcus Lattimore is one of the greatest running backs in school history. Really hoping he does well in his recovery from that knee injury. There are a lot of things to look forward to with him. If he can make his way back, there's a lot of football potentially ahead of him. If he can make it to the next level, he can get a team to take a chance on him in the NFL draft. But, you know, quite honestly, South Carolina has some other things going for them. Connor Shaw's been a consistent quarterback. They've got talent. And then you go to the defensive end. You look at what Jadeveon Clowney's been able to do all season long. I'm worried for the health of the Michigan quarterbacks and for the health of Denard Robinson, because that guy is absolutely unblockable one-on-one. I don't know how Michigan is going to be able to match up with them. They've got an All-American tackle, but if they end up moving Clowney all over the place, I would give him the matchup advantage in any one-on-one face-off he will have against the Michigan offensive line.
Well, we look at some of these other games that are going on. I want to just get through some of these bowl games because, as usual, time goes by when you're having fun. It sounds like probably Evan probably had too much fun. Maybe he was studying. Don't you guys have finals or something going on now or something? We'll just say that he's studying in the frat house with his frat buddies. Let's look at the Capital One Bowl, Jimmy. Georgia versus Nebraska, obviously another Big Ten team. Nebraska is a team that I thought we would see in the Rose Bowl. I thought they had a lot of opportunities to be there. Obviously not the case. Wisconsin making their appearance there again in the Rose Bowl, and we're going to get to that game in a minute. But talk to us about the legacy of Aaron Murray's legacy at Georgia. A win at Georgia, what would that mean to him?
Well, it would mean a lot, quite frankly, because Aaron Murray has been tied with Mark Richt from the very beginning of his tenure, Murray's tenure there. Richt has been under fire for most of Murray's career, and this has been the season that Georgia has really come back. They've cooled Richt's seat, and they had a legitimate shot a couple weeks ago to go to the national championship game and play Notre Dame there. Aaron Murray, one of the best quarterbacks in the country. You always hear Peyton Manning talking about him and his skills at the Peyton Manning Passing Academy. But when you look at Aaron Murray just as a prototypical passer, he's made a lot of big-time strides since his freshman season. He only gets better. And really, when you look at the history of Georgia quarterbacks, this guy is right up there with some of the recent greats, like DJ Shockley, like David Green. He still has not had that marquee bowl win at the upper levels that a guy like David Green had. But he's really in a position to put himself in that echelon with a really strong performance here and a really good performance next year. He's one of the top candidates for the Heisman Trophy next season if he elects to stay. And he's one of the greatest quarterbacks in college football we have today.
I could agree with you more. I want to take, before we get over to the Rose Bowl, I want to talk about a little bit about Johnny Quarterback. Obviously, no surprises there in the Heisman Trophy. When we didn't get a chance to really talk about it last week. This guy, you know, every year, and maybe this just goes to show the development of these young players. Used to be once in a great while, you'd see an Andrew Luck or you'd see an RG3. Now you see a Johnny Quarterback. And we look at Tim Tebow. We look at Andrew Luck. We look at RG3. Now we got Johnny Quarterback. It seems like every couple of years we have a brand new elite star. Is Johnny Quarterback in that crowd of conversations?
I think he kind of is. I mean, the fact that he won the Heisman as a freshman is really impressive. And he broke Tim Tebow and Cam Newton's old records that they had set. And he's got a lot of football still out of him if he's able to stay healthy. But I think that's, like I said earlier, more of an indication of the state of college football today. It's going to continue to go that way. They're going to continue to be good players. I don't think he's the best offensive player in college football history. I think he's just the product of a really, really good offensive mind. I think there are probably a dozen quarterbacks who could do similar things to what Manziel has done. And really, I like what he's been able to do, but I don't think he's that unique.
So what you're saying is it's not really Johnny Quarterback, if he played at, we'll just throw an imaginary team together. If he just played at Stanford, like Luck did, would he be the same quarterback? Or if he played at Miami, for example, would he be the same quarterback? Are you saying he's the quarterback he is because of where he is?
Well, I think he'd still be an exciting football player, but he wouldn't be putting together any 43 touchdowns. I'll tell you that right now. He obviously has great athletic ability. He's a very good improviser. He's got decent enough arm strength. He's deceptively strong in the arm as far as throwing goes. But when it comes down to it, he's not a guy who you look at and say, this is what I'm going to build my team around regardless of my offensive play style. He would be a very good quarterback anywhere he went. I'm not saying anything besides that. I think he's better than what Everett Golson is right now. And Everett Golson is a redshirt freshman. Manziel, I believe, is a true freshman. And it's quite obvious that he's further along than Golson is. They're about the same type of player. But I'm also not saying that there aren't probably 10 quarterbacks in the country better than Manziel at what they do.
Well, and I that is a very good argument there, and I, for some reason, have bought into the hype that Johnny Quarterback is, you know, Johnny on the spot. You know, you've heard it a million times. Well, we're going to get on over here to the Rose Bowl. I want to talk about the granddaddy of them all. In my opinion, maybe it's just because I'm old school. I think this year, in years past, the BCS got the national championship right. Notre Dame should be there. I think that's definitely where the national championship should be. But I'm not a big fan of the BCS, and I guess I'm old school on this, but I still think the Rose Bowl should be the national championship. But yet again, we have another Big Ten team represented in a very big bowl game. And we talked about it the earlier part of this season, how the Big Ten had a weak schedule. And I don't know if that weak schedule attributed to as many bowl appearances that the Big Ten has. But we look at the Big Ten, and we look at Stanford, and we look at Wisconsin going into the Rose Bowl. Really a classic matchup, wouldn't you say?
Yeah, and Wisconsin has had a down year for them this season, but they still managed to absolutely knock the slobber out of Nebraska. They deserve to be here. They don't have their coach, Brett Bielema. He's moved on to what he perceives to be greener pastures at Arkansas. But at the same time, Wisconsin has shown that they are capable of absolutely running down the throat of most teams that they want to. They played a really ugly game against Ohio State, but still managed a near victory against them at the very end of the college football regular season. And Stanford is a similar team. They're the number 6 team in the country because they've done so well recently against Oregon and against UCLA, but Notre Dame showed the template for beating these guys. And Wisconsin plays a very similar style of football. Their defense is not quite as good. I think their running game is better. It's going to be an interesting contest.
Well, we didn't have an opportunity to get into any college basketball or college hoops talk. Is there anything that you want to throw in there as a last thought regarding college hoops?
Well, IU and Butler are playing today, so that should be a pretty solid game at 2 o'clock. I will be at Bankers Life Fieldhouse, and I'll throw in a little plug there, too. You can follow me on Twitter at either my personal account, JPCIV, or IU Sportcom for updates. I will be there. It should be a really outstanding game.
Well, anytime you see Butler and IU get together, especially with the way the season that Butler's been having over the last few years, and the season that IU is having now, it's an exciting win. I actually am not going to be able to watch that game. Maybe I will. I don't know yet, but we'll see about that. But I have some family obligations that I'm more than willing to go to as well. Well, Jimmy, next week is the best of, so we won't see you next week. And providing that the world doesn't come to an end, so we appreciate you joining us on The Balance. We'll talk to you next year, and we'll get into some more college basketball talk then, and we'll certainly a recap of some of the bowl games. Jimmy, you have yourself a safe and Merry Christmas, sir.
Well, dude, Tom, you do the same. Have yourself a Merry, Merry Christmas. It's been a great year on The Balance. Thanks a bunch for having me.
Absolutely. I hope that you make it through Doomsday, buddy. All right, Jimmy the intern from down at Indiana University talking with us about the bowl games. Obviously, we wanted to get into some college hoop talk, and that didn't happen today. We're going to take a break. Segment number two is right around the corner. Mr. Jeff Kurtz is standing in the wings for us. We're going to be talking about some the Chicago Bears. This playoff picture starting to take shape. The Colts controlling their own destiny. Kind of get his thoughts on that. The Bears also, and we're going to break down the Chicago Bears in our look around the NFL. And so we're going to be right back, guys, on the last episode of The Balance because, well, we know what's going to happen on December the 21st. The world is going to come to an end. We'll be right back.
Fastlane Cycles Incorporated, located at 100 Gasoline Alley Suite D in Indianapolis, specializes in quality performance for your bike. A distributor for all major suppliers, we can do everything from service and motor work to customizations and insurance estimates. Give us a call at 317-247-8088. Fastlane Cycles Incorporated at 317-247-8088.
Over the course of history, there have been many great revolutions. The French Revolution, the American Revolution, the Cuban Revolution, and now in 2012, there's a brand new revolution for the fan revolution, IndyProSports.com. That's IndyProSports.com. Indy Pro Sports is for the serious Indiana fan who roots for the Colts, the Pacers, the Indians, and so much more. Make sure you check out IndyProSports.com. Be a part of the revolution on Twitter, Pro Indy, and on Facebook, Indy Pro Sports.
Hi, I'm Mark Timmons of U.S. Water Systems, a family-owned Indiana company that sells water treatment equipment around the world. But we especially know Indiana water because our world headquarters are right here in Indy. You have bad water in your home or business? Whether you're on city or well water, uswatersystems.com makes it easy to solve your water problems. We offer videos, all sorts of water conditioning equipment, and tech support 365 days a year by certified water specialists. U.S. Water has reverse osmosis systems, water softeners, and salt-free water conditioners from $179. Visit us at uswatersystems.com.
In the spirit of Christmas and Kwanzaa. And Shalom Shazam to you too, my sister.
All right, welcome back to The Balance Online. My name's Tom Marquist. Well, you know what? We get so caught up talking college football and everything, and we do have Jeff Kurtz on the line with us here. We're gonna get right to him in just a moment. But hey, Jeff, are you with us?
Yes. Good morning, Tom. Happy holidays.
Happy holidays to you, sir. We are gonna get right to you here in just a moment. We always run, and maybe you've heard it before here on the show, but we always run Elizabeth the Greek, which is our picks, our NFL picks. So it's a good segue into what our conversation is about. And so we're gonna get into Elizabeth the Greek right here in just a moment, and then we'll get on our conversation here. I do apologize. We'll be right back with Elizabeth the Greek.
Sunday.
That's right. It's Sunday. That's right, my minions. It's time for Radio Speed Talk with Cliff, Pete, and the whole gang. Hi, my name's Tom Marquis, El President.
Open Gangnam Style. Gangnam Style. 낮에는 따사로운 인간적인 여자, 커피 한 잔에 여유를 아는 품격 있는 여자, 밤이 오면 심장이 뜨거워지는 여자, 그런 반전 있는 여자. 너는 선호해, 낮에는 너만큼 따사로운 그런 선호해, 커피 식기도 전에 원샷 때리는 선호해, 밤이 오면 심장이 터져버리는 선호해.
Ladies and gentlemen,
I need to be reminded of what Christmas is all about. Football.
It's time for
the Liverpool Grinch.
Wake up, Cole.
Come on, Christmas.
Elizabeth, we are back now. We are going to do some NFL picks. Last week we only had actually picked one game, and that was actually the really good one. It was the Army-Navy game, and you picked Army. Guess what?
What?
Army lost. So you are officially 0-1. You actually had a winless week on you. Let's get into it. You did pick all your college bowl games in advance, so we can go with, in the New Mexico Bowl, you're going with?
Nevada.
In the famous Idaho Potato Bowl, you're going with?
Toledo.
Go on to the NFL. Going to pick a couple 1 o'clock games because all the 4 o'clocks are stinkers. So start off with the first one. Do you go with the Green Bay Packers or the Chicago Bears?
Chicago Bears.
Chicago Bears. Next game, the Indianapolis Colts or the Houston Texans?
Houston Texans.
One more 1 o'clock game, another good one. Do you go with the Denver Broncos or the Baltimore Ravens?
The Baltimore Ravens.
The Baltimore Ravens. Moving on to 4 o'clock, the Pittsburgh Steelers or the Dallas Cowboys?
Dallas Cowboys.
Moving on to Sunday night. You go with the San Francisco 49ers or the New England Patriots?
Patriots.
Going with the New England Patriots. And finally, on Monday night, are you going with the New York Jets or the Tennessee Titans?
I said the Tennessee Titans.
The Tennessee Titans. All right, who picked those?
Elizabeth the Greek. But I'm going to like me on Facebook, facebook.com/Elizabeth the Greek.
Here we go. Blue 20!
Football. Catch the fever. The sport of kings.
And now let's talk some football.
Ho, ho, ho. Merry Christmas.
All right, my minions, welcome back to The Balance. My name's Tom Marquis, El Presidente. All right, we're back on schedule. We just veered off the road for just a little bit, but we're back on the road with us as well. With us is Mr. Jeff Kurtz of Bear Claws. Jeff, how we doing, sir?
We're doing great. Thanks for having me on.
Hey, man, I am so glad that you're with us. Sorry about that little bump and turbulence there. Sometimes that happens in live radio. I had everything all queued up and ready to go, but got all excited talking about some college football. It just zipped right past me. My producer was like, you forgot something, so I had to backtrack. Sorry about that. Hey, well, welcome back to the Balance. We're going to get into some Bear Talk here in just a moment. But what I want to do, what I've been doing with everybody that we've talked to today, obviously we look at the tragedy in Connecticut yesterday and what a tragedy it was. And you just can't help but your heart go out to all the families involved with that. And all of our thoughts and prayers go out to them. Now, let me ask, I don't know what you do exactly in the real world, but every workplace should have, if not have, a drill in place. But we also look at the kids and the children involved in these situations. Well, I guess maybe what my question to you is, are there any thoughts that you have? Is there anything that you do at your workplace or anything that prepares you for such a tragedy, or do you think that's an impossible thing to do?
Well, your thoughts there are very well stated, Tom. Certainly our thoughts and prayers go out to those folks. Just an unspeakable tragedy. I actually work for a financial institution, and that is a high-risk profession at times. Unfortunately, there are circumstances where there are robberies and things of that nature take place. We actually had a couple over the last month throughout our footprint. I don't know that you can ever totally prepare yourself for something that, you know, seems so surreal and out of the ordinary. I think that we all have precautions in place. You hope that you never have to use those, and yet you hope that you can react in the appropriate way. But just an unspeakable tragedy. And my thought always goes to how and why we manufacture the people that have these kind of thoughts. And if someone is unhappy, you know, take it out on themselves, not other people. I just never fully comprehend that, and it's just a real unfortunate circumstance, especially around the time of the year. And I'm not sure really what you would say as a parent to a child, except try to be honest and forthright and steer them through that. But you know, we just do the best that we can and try to look at the good, and by and large, there are a lot better people in the world than folks who want to harm us. So I think you just try to keep a positive attitude and live life the fullest and all those cliches to the best that you can each day.
Absolutely. And you mentioned that you're in the financial, you know, world, and you're absolutely, there are things that come into play. And one of the buzzwords that we're learning is that workplaces have implemented, and in your place probably as well, have implemented various different drills to practice in the event, and it's sad that we have to do this, but in the event of this buzzword that they're calling an active shooter. Do you guys have such a protocol in place for your place of employment?
A very comprehensive security plan with several steps and exact procedures and processes to handle those type of situations, sure.
Okay. Well, we're going to move on. Obviously, you called to talk about the Bears. You called to talk about some NFL, and that's what we're here to do. Chicago Bears quarterback Jay Cutler appears to be ready to play against the Packers. Obviously, that's a showdown like anything else. When it's the Bears, the Packers, I don't think any other record matters. But, of course, we look at where the Bears are at this year. We look at where the Colts are at this year. And we look at other numerous teams throughout the NFL, where they're at this year. You know, and Cutler was able to practice fully on Friday despite his knee and neck problem. And so you go against the Packers. What's going on there? What's going on? You guys are starting to get a little nervous, I'm sure.
Tom, it's really been a change in seasons from when I talked with you earlier in the years when the Bears were sailing along with a 7-1 record. The defense was creating a lot of turnovers and scoring, and the offense was doing just enough to back that up. Over the last second half of the season, injuries have caught up with the team. They're playing behind a ineffective and porous offensive line. I don't know a quarterback that's been hit more than Jay Cutler has in his time in Chicago over the last 3 or 4 years. They've lost 4 or 5, so when what once seemed like a promising deep into the playoffs Super Bowl type run at 7-1, now the Bears are kind of scratching and clawing, no pun intended, to get in the playoffs at 8-5. They're a game behind Green Bay. They've lost 5 in the series to the Packers. With a win, Green Bay solidifies the NFC North, so it's a huge game, and that's not an understatement. The Bears are trying to right the ship. Green Bay trying to punch their ticket to the playoffs with the division crown tomorrow. Bears are still banged up. Jay Cutler is going to play. He's coming off a neck sprain. He also, tests have shown, a mild MCL sprain, but it's not severe. So he's going to play through that. He's a gamer. The offensive line is still a work in process. They've really retooled that. Right now, the Bears offense really is Jay Cutler throwing it up to Brandon Marshall, who's had a a wonderful season, even beyond what any expectations were. They're going to try to get the running game in order. Matt Forte has not run as hard or been as explosive, and I think that's partly due to the offensive line, but he just doesn't seem to be the same back as he was. He's been nicked up some this year, but that's the recipe against Green Bay. Try to keep Aaron Rodgers off the field. The Packers have been a team that has been leaky against the run, so the Bears are going to try to exploit that, and they'll need somebody else besides Brandon Marshall to be a playmaker on offense, because the Packers did a real nice job in the first meeting in September taking away Marshall. He was limited to a season-low 2 receptions in that game, so they'll need somebody else. Unfortunately, Earl Bennett is going to be out, missing the second game with a concussion, so they'll look to the rookie Alshon Jeffrey, possibly Devin Hester, although he dropped a sure touchdown pass last week against Minnesota. They need somebody else to help supplement that offensive attack, and then hope from a defensive standpoint that maybe the Packers will put the ball on the ground, that they'll be able to muster a good pass rush against Aaron Rodgers and come up with some turnovers. That's really the key to the game.
Well, let's talk about that. I mean, here's some keys to the game, but also we talk about the Packers and the Bears, and they're always at it. And this is not a different week than that on the off field. You look at the battle of sticks and stones may break my bones, but words may never hurt me. But I don't know, maybe in football that's different. You look at Lance Briggs, who called Jeremiah Finley an idiot for suggesting that the Bears would be better off without Brian Urlacher. He said he's an idiot, Briggs said. It's just suit up and play ball. And his comments aren't going to change the outcome of the game. They aren't going to help him or anybody play better. It doesn't really matter, Finley told Fox Sports in Wisconsin, that Urlacher, who's 34, is slowing down in his latter years. So thoughts on those comments, does it really matter?
Tom, I'm not a guy – I'm glad you brought that up. I'm not a guy who favors a lot of talking. I think your actions on the field definitely are the more important thing. But in this case, I do think that the War of Words this week has added a little extra spark to the rivalry with where both teams are sitting at in terms of the records and the playoff implication. I also think it might be a good motivator for the Bears to kind of wake them up from this late season slumber. December has not been kind to them in the recent couple of seasons. They've really faltered down the stretch. So I see this as something that maybe will give them a little extra motivation come Sunday. Brandon Marshall has also had some unkind things to say, challenging the Packers to play him one-on-one because they really double and triple teamed him the first meeting. They both talked to Marshall and Briggs about their dislike for the Packers. So in this context and in this particular situation, I think that might add a little extra energy. Now, with that being said, you know, it's all going to come down to the game. If the Bears play well, then maybe that has helped. If they create or make a bunch of turnovers on their own, Jay Cutler throws the ball up and it's intercepted 4 or 5 times and they play poorly, then, you know, all that stuff is kind of swept under the rug. But in this particular case, I do like the chirping from the Bears side. I think that they need something to kind of put a chip back on their shoulder. The Packers have been the kings of the NFC North the last couple of years. We'll see how it works out come 1 o'clock on Sunday afternoon.
Well, let's face it, the Bears control their own destiny. I mean, let's look at some of the, you know, going now after 1-4 stretch playing past week 17 is no longer a guarantee for the league's fastest falling team. The Bears currently set at number 6, just 1 game ahead of the Vikings, the Cowboys. So the Bears own the tiebreaker, so they control their own destiny. And obviously you throw in the Redskins in the mix. A loss to Green Bay, well, that's pretty much the end and the nail in the coffin for them. But a win against Green Bay could certainly inch them a little bit closer to that playoff, wild card playoff situation. So the Bears control their own destiny, but you look at injuries and all the things that Lovie Smith and the Bears are dealing with. Is this a reality, or is this just, you know, you're going to have to chalk it up as a disappointing season? Have you guys, as the Bears said, hey, we're going to play our best, but we're not really have any unrealistic expectations. Or they say, you know what, we're still in this. We can win this. We're the Chicago Bears.
I think it is a team full of prideful veteran leaders, especially if you look at the defense. You look at Lance Briggs. You look at Brian Urlacher, who still hopes to be back to the season finale December 30th against Detroit. You look at Julius Peppers. You look at Charles Peanut Tillman. You look at some of the other folks there that are on the team. You look at a guy like Jay Cutler, who's played through injuries, and Brandon Marshall. They have a lot of very prideful football players on the team. This is undoubtedly the biggest game in Lovie Smith's career, and I would submit to you it's bigger than the Super Bowl, because if the Bears falter and don't make the playoffs after starting 7-1, this could be the end of his tenure in Chicago. A lot of fans are clamoring for his exit already. They don't think that there's really any hope left in the season. If they do manage to quick in the playoffs, they're thinking that they're going to be an early out. The way I look at it, you know, as you say, their destiny is in their own hands. I don't think the division title with the win tomorrow would be out of reach, because you start looking at the last couple games of the season. The Packers still have to play at Minnesota in that season finale, and that's a pretty heated rivalry between those two teams. Adrian Peterson will be looking for a rushing record in the Dome at Minnesota. Jared Allen can cause some problems. So if the Bears could somehow manage to put together a three-game win streak to end the season, including the game tomorrow, they would be positioned to possibly take the NFC North. If they lose, then they're going to have to look at the other schedules. You've got the Redskins, you've got the Vikings, you've got the Cowboys, you've got Seattle in the NFC West. Either they or San Francisco is going to take one of those playoff spots. So then you'd have to start looking and hoping and looking at the schedules and seeing what other teams do and rely on some help. They still would be in a decent position for a wild card with two wins in their last three games. But this is a huge game, and like I said, it's not an understatement. It could spell either the end of Lovie Smith's time in Chicago if they falter and don't make the playoffs, or it could be a springboard to really kind of reclaim where they were at earlier in the season. Who knows? The Giants last year were 7-7. Everybody was giving them up for dead, and then they came on a late season win streak and then made it to the Super Bowl and won. So you never know in the NFL. It's kind of a week-to-week league, and if you get hot at the right time at the end of the season, you can use that as a springboard. I'm not saying it's going to happen, but it's been kind of a trend the last couple years in the league.
Absolutely. Well, we're talking with Jeff Kurtz of Bear Claws, obviously blogger for the Chicago Bears, self-proclaimed expert of the Chicago Bears and the NFL. So glad that you guys could join us today on our Doomsday special. Jeff, are you ready for Doomsday? I mean, because this could be the end.
Well, I thought about that a couple times, and as you alluded to it earlier in the season, I hope that I guess I got a lot of stuff I need to get done here in the last week to make sure that I'm ready and happy with everything that I've accomplished or on my to-do list.
Well, absolutely. You know what? We've got a great team here, obviously, behind the scenes. Michelle Jones, our social media director and producer as well, special guest in the studio as well, Mrs. Jones. That's right. Michelle's mom is visiting and is watching the show unfold as it is, and she is stargazed and amazed that we have Jeff Kurtz talking about the Chicago Bears on the air with us. So we're glad that she could join us here in the studios today. Well, real quickly, I want to get a little bit more about the playoff scenarios, and then we're going to get into some fantasy football huddle. If you could hang around with us, that would be fantastic. But you look at the 2013 playoff scenarios. Obviously, we look at our backyard here, the Indianapolis Colts. What a great season this has turned out to be for them. I don't care if we make it to the playoffs or not, because we were never expected to get. We win either which way. If we go to the playoffs, hallelujah, we went to the playoffs. If we don't go to the playoffs, hey, it's great. What a great. Did you guys see the Colts this year? So the Colts are definitely controlling their own destiny. And you listen to a lot of the local media and stuff, and they say, well, you know, they're doing so good because they don't know any better. They don't know how to lose. And I think that's a mentality that's acquired in the NFL. They don't know how to lose. So let's talk about the Colts, the Texans. Obviously, they just got to win one more. And, you know, you look at the beaten the beatdown that New England gave the Texans, they're not going to be in a very good mood and at home. So obviously they're going to be coming out with all guns blazing. But they just the Colts just have to win one of the next three to be in. So the old saying, you win, you're in. So thoughts on the Indianapolis Colts?
Well, it has been a magical season for him, Tom. Couldn't have said it better myself. Andrew Luck has been everything that people thought he would be and more. They've won a lot of close games. They've shown some resiliency. Obviously, they've had the situation with Chuck Pagano and went through that adversity. And Bruce Arians has really steered the ship and been a good person at the helm to kind of keep the team together. They've shown resiliency in games that they've come from behind where it looked like they were going to wind up on the losing end. So they've had some playmakers, some unexpected contributions from some guys, and I think they're in a real strong position from a playoff standpoint. The AFC is down a little bit this year. I think with the schedule, I think that's going to be a tough game, as you say, tomorrow against Houston, although the Texans, every time they've been put on a national pedestal, have pretty much wet the bed, so to speak. So I don't think that we really know how strong that team is until we see them in the postseason. And Indianapolis goes to Kansas City next week, and that's a very poor Chiefs ball club. And then they get the Texans at home in the season finale. So I think they're in a real strong position. And as you say, from once you get in the playoffs, you never know what happens. And I think that that's beyond probably the wildest expectations of even the most diehard Indianapolis Colts fans to think that their team after last season and losing Peyton Manning would be in a position like this. So everything's kind of gravy from this point on. But I think they're really the odds-on favorite to claim one of those top wild card spots in the AFC, no question about it.
Well, let's talk about gravy, and you talk about us media people biting at the chops, and you know how your dog will beg at the dinner table for just a little bit of something to gnaw on, and gravy in his gravy bowl. This is what we're gnawing on: Luck, Manning in a postseason game. We're foaming at the mouth waiting for that to happen. You think that's a possibility?
Yeah, I do. I'm sure that. I think that the hype for that contest, if it would unfold, would just go through the roof. And it's just hard to imagine, really, and how fortunate Indianapolis fans are to have went from Peyton Manning to Andrew Luck. Usually it doesn't happen that way in the NFL. There are teams that are still searching for a franchise quarterback and have been for a long time. And to really be in that position where you – follow up with a Hall of Famer, one of arguably the greatest players in the league who has ever performed, to a rising young superstar is just kind of hard. That's good luck. I wish I had that kind of luck, and a lot of teams do as well. So if that matchup would unfold, I'm sure that it would be warmly received by the folks in Indianapolis and would be one of the games that a lot of folks would have eyeballs on.
Well, definitely. Luck has brought us a lot of luck. But the AFC has turned itself around. And you look at what Cincinnati did, just a fresh off a 34-13 beat down to Philadelphia. They're just a game and a half behind the Ravens. You look at the Ravens, you look at the Bengals, you look at the Broncos. It could be any one of those guys in the AFC playoff scenario. But if you were to put it together for an AFC championship prediction right now, Jeff, what would it be?
I think that you have to think that New England's going to factor in that equation. I think they've been the most consistent team that I've seen play all year. And in terms of who might make it to the championship game to possibly oppose them, I really, that's up in the air. I would favor very slightly. I think Baltimore would be the second most consistent team, but that's a real head-scratcher with the firing of their offensive coordinator, Cam Cameron, the former IU coach, this past week. I'm not really sure why they would do that at this point in the season. They've been somewhat inconsistent, and I know that they've disappointed in some of their play. Their defense has fallen off to a degree, but I guess I would give them the slight edge, but I wouldn't be real confident. I would say New England looks like the team to beat in AFC, and after that, it's really wide open.
Well, and absolutely, and this is going to be, in my opinion, this is going to be one of the best playoff scenarios in on both sides of the fence, NFC and AFC, as there is. And obviously, everybody's trying to get to the Super Bowl. I would think right now that New England has a very good chance of getting to the Super Bowl. Perhaps the Ravens will finally make it through the AFC playoffs. But how special would that be for Peyton Manning to make an appearance in the Super Bowl this year? So anything could happen in the AFC. Let's move over to your side of the fence, Jeff, and that's the NFC. Obviously, we talked about the Bears being on the outside looking in. Let's talk about another team that's right there just like the Bears, the Dallas Cowboys, you know, on the outside looking in. They've had a hard road this year, and obviously the Cowboys have not had a pretty season by any stretch of the imagination. But now that the smoke is cleared, look who's still standing, the Dallas Cowboys.
Yeah, they have played through some adversity, no doubt about it as well. They're just the team, though, that every time you think they're going to get on a roll, they'll drop a game at home or play poorly against a team that they should have no trouble with. So I'm really curious how the season kind of plays out for them. I think Jason Garrett's job is on the line as well. If they don't make the playoffs, I think they're going to make a coaching change in Dallas. They're just kind of a tease. You know, with Tony Romo, they play well enough on offense. He's a playmaker. They've got some weapons. Their defense has been nicked up by injury a little bit and has really been inconsistent. I don't think they're very strong on that side of the ball, but the schedule kind of plays into their favor. They played the Saints at home. They've got a home game against Pittsburgh tomorrow afternoon. 4 o'clock kickoff that will be real key. And then they also play Washington. So to some degree, they have their destiny in their own hands. But just they're too up and down for me. I would be surprised if they're one of the playoff teams. But in a season where, you know, everything's kind of went upside down and you really couldn't figure any team out per se, that's the kind of thing that could happen this year. They could eke into the playoffs.
Well, let's talk about Minnesota. They're in the same boat. You, Minnesota, Dallas, all right there. And I, in my opinion, I think Adrian Peterson, and certainly those of, and we're going to get into this fantasy football discussion here in a moment, would argue that Adrian Peterson is back. AP has established himself again as one of the best running backs in the NFL, if not ever. So does Minnesota get into the playoffs with Adrian Peterson healthy?
You know, I think their quarterback situation with Christian Ponder, I don't think that he's effective enough for them to put together a run here. I expect that they'll stumble someplace along the line. The 3 games left, they play Green Bay at home. They have a game tomorrow at St. Louis, I believe, that could be a tough one. The Rams are really on the outside looking in at 6-6-1, but they're not mathematically eliminated, so on the road, that could be a tough one for the Vikings. I just think their quarterback play is going to hold them back. Without Peterson, and it's remarkable to think that last year at this time, he shredded his knee, and to come back and have the kind of season he had, it's just unbelievable. He is stamps himself as one of the best running backs in the history of the NFL, no doubt about it. But I don't think that he can carry that team all the way to a playoff run.
Well, who's going to be in the NFC championship game? We want to look at the 49ers. I think that there's a good possibility that the 49ers are well back on their road to being where they need to be at. What are your thoughts?
Yeah, I think that San Francisco is a team that you have to give a lot of consideration to. Obviously, Atlanta has sewn up their division. They look like they're going to have the number one seed. I'm not sold on the Falcons. I think that they've been fortunate to win some very close games, and they don't strike me as a team that once you get into the second season and the postseason is just tough, physical, defensive-minded enough to win some of those games in the clutch. They've been in the situation before, and they've come up short. So I think you have to give them some consideration just because it looks like they'll have the home field advantage. But I would really favor San Francisco and someone else from a collection, whether it's Green Bay. I don't think the Giants are going to be consistent enough to have that late season run again, but they would be in the mix. I think a team that's real dangerous, and I saw them up close and personal a couple weeks ago, is the Seattle Seahawks. Phenomenal season that Russell Wilson has put together in his rookie year. The youngster from Wisconsin, transfer from North Carolina State, A lot of people didn't think that he could be a pro quarterback, and he's really shown a lot of veteran poise, led Seattle to a come-from-behind victory against Chicago on the Bears' home field 2 weeks ago, where he drove his team 97 yards to put the Seahawks ahead, and then in overtime, an 80-yard drive, and he just shows a lot of composure beyond his age. He keeps plays alive with his feet. He's got a lot of poise and vision down the field, and he's an accurate thrower. So they're kind of a team that's out there in the wild card mix. I wouldn't put it behind or wouldn't put it past them that they could possibly still win the NFC West. They have a big game with the 49ers coming up in Seattle next week. So they're a possibility as well if you want to look at somebody a little bit under the radar.
Well, real quickly, and then we're going to get in and have to take a break and come back for some fantasy football huddle. Are you going to be able to stay around with us?
Sure, I'll stick around with you.
I want to get your thoughts as a blogger. And, you know, I also post a blog, but, you know, I have this show here. So my avenue is this. Your avenue is a blogger. As a blogger, and let's talk about freedom of speech, because that's something that's attacked bloggers and well, even independent radio people like myself and, you know, people out there who are doing their thing because they can, because of freedom of speech. I want to talk with you a little bit about the comments by Rob Parker from ESPN regarding RG3. An opinion? Yes. A fact? No. Maybe the comments shouldn't have been made. My question is, doesn't this come into the question of freedom of speech? And don't we want to stir the pot a little bit? And I don't necessarily agree with his comments, but are we in a situation to where we are now censoring our on-air personalities for their creativity, for their questions? And maybe it was a fair question. I mean, it's not like it was a white guy that asked the question. What do you think about that? Obviously, if you don't know, and for our listeners that don't know, Rob Parker was suspended indefinitely for his on-air comments about Washington's Redskins quarterback, RG3, regarding his blackness and being a quarterback. And this all results around a comment that in an interview that RG3 said he doesn't play race into the black quarterback scenario. And if you look back, Rush Limbaugh was fired from ESPN and blocked by NFL owners from even possibly owning an NFL team. And obviously, nobody's pushed that freedom of speech clause in the Constitution any further than Rush Limbaugh. So what are your thoughts on this?
Yeah, that's a real difficult question. I'm not sure that in the short amount of time that I can really give that an adequate answer. I would say this, and I can only speak for myself. I think that there's a fine line between being a responsible, quote-unquote, journalist. I don't think that just because you have a blog, that entitles you to just rant and rave and say. I think you have to be somewhat even-handed with your comments. Now, if people want to be creative and have opinions, that's all part of a free society. So I think you have to just kind of measure that when you're saying something, you're saying it because it's what you believe and that you've got some kind of balance to why you're saying that rather than just throwing it out to try to evoke some type of reaction. I'm very careful. I like to be opinionated on my blog. I love the Bears and I've been a long-term fan, but I'm objective enough to know when they play well and when they play poorly and to say that. And if it's the specific players that are hurting the team or playing poorly, then I'm going to say that as well. I think that those are things that everybody can see, so there's no harm in having a strong opinion about it. When you get into some other things as far as race and especially the issue that was raised with RG3, for my money, and maybe I'm just looking at it very simplistically, I think we're well beyond that. I don't look at the color of somebody's quarterback. I care whether the guy can play and help a team win and what he does on the field. So I think that that's kind of a tired, lazy argument to some degree. But I think that when you put something in print, online, or even in a forum like what we're talking about, internet radio or over-the-air radio, that you have to be able to have some type of credibility and professionalism and be able to back up what you say, at least why you think that, rather than just throwing it out to kind of stir the pot. That's just my two-minute soliloquy on that.
Oh, you're more than welcome. You know, that's what I'm a firm, and that was one of the reasons why we started this show. I've worked for ESPN Radio. I've worked for major networks, local radio, and various different levels. And it got to the point, especially with ESPN Radio, where they say, here's who you're going to interview. Here's your questions. Guide the questions into this sort of dialogue because this is what we want. Well, this is what we want, but is this what the listeners want to hear? And maybe his comments were off the cuff, and maybe they were uncalled for. But at the same time, we look at a heavy black community that is NFL fans, NBA fans, or sports fans in general. Nothing wrong with that at all. But maybe he was trying to make the contrast that maybe he's trying to be one of black people, and he's not. Maybe that's all he was trying to say, but there again, ESPN, oh, he used the word race. You can call somebody an idiot on your blog. You can do whatever you want, but you bring up race, and it brings up a problem. So it is a touchy situation. It's a gray situation. Obviously, I agree with what you're saying wholeheartedly, Jeff. You don't want to go out there and offend a particular group of people, but you've got to be able to say something that's on your mind. And I think when we get to the point where we're a good journalist, like Rob Parker is, and columnist, I mean, let's put all of that aside. He is very good at what he does, and to give an opinion, maybe I'd just say a suspension in order, maybe not to lose his job. I'm not sure. You look at the same thing
right.
with Don Imus. Look at the comment that Don Imus made about the women's basketball. This isn't anything new that's happened in journalists. They're going to make comments that are off the cuff. So, but we got to move on. We do digress on this show and regress again. We're gonna take a break. But hey, Jeff, the only thing I want to know is we're collecting videos, guys, and it's going to be on our Twitter, T Balance, guys. Just send us your videos of doing this. And Jeff, all I want to know, do we have your video? What I want to know, Jeff, is can you do the Gangnam dance? Are you with me, Jeff?
Yeah, I am. I'm sorry. I was I'm dumbstruck here and speechless.
Well, guys, I do want to remind everyone of our bet with Sparky, Super Colts fan. Now, this is a safe bet for me because I made the bet, so I can call it a sucker bet if you want. If the Colts get to the Super Bowl, I will go out on Monument Circle, dress up in all the Colts super crazy fan, super fan gear that they can gather up for me, and I will do this dance out on Monument Circle. Vice versa, if they don't make it to the Super Bowl, because on last week's show, Sparky, if you remember, my minion said this, the Colts can make it to the Super Bowl. And I said, oh, we got to look past, you know, the Broncos, the Ravens, you know, teams that actually are at New England, teams that actually are going to have an opportunity. It's great if that happens. So we made that little friendly wager. So Jeff, if that happens, we want you to cover it for Bears Claws as well.
Sure will.
All right. Well, we're going to take a break, guys. When we get back, we're going to get right into Fantasy Football Huddle. That's right. This is the last episode of The Balance because it's doomsday, and it's right around the corner. Are you ready for doomsday, Jeff?
I've got a week to prepare.
All right. We'll be right back, guys.
Hi, I'm Mark Timmons of U.S. Water Systems, a family-owned Indiana company that sells water treatment equipment around the world. But we especially know Indiana water because our world headquarters are right here in Indy. You have bad water in your home or business? Whether you're on city or well water, uswatersystems.com makes it easy to solve your water problems. We offer videos, all sorts of water conditioning equipment, and tech support 365 days a year by certified water specialists. U.S. Water has reverse osmosis systems, water softeners, and salt-free water conditioners from $179. Visit us at uswatersystems.com.
over the course of history, there have been many great revolutions. The French Revolution, the American Revolution, the Cuban Revolution, and now in 2012, there's a brand new revolution for the fan. The Fan Revolution, IndyProSports.com. That's IndyProSports.com. IndyProSports is for the serious Indiana fan who roots for the Colts, the Pacers, the Indians, and so much more. Make sure you check out IndyProSports.com. Be a part of the revolution on Twitter, ProIndy, and on Facebook, IndyProSports.
Your grandfather used to make me box him to get my Christmas presents. I got one for every round I lasted.
Ho, ho, ho. Merry Christmas.
Welcome back to the balance, the final 15 minutes of the of today's program, right before Christmas, right before Doomsday. So, you know, maybe Christmas and Doomsday is all in one. I don't know. I get a big kick out of this, and I've said that I'm just going to wait to do my Christmas shopping on December the 22nd in case I spend my money beforehand. Well, guys, we're going to jump into the fantasy football huddle, and we got the last 15 minutes joining us as today in the huddle is Mr. Jeff Kurtz of Bear Claws, going to be breaking down some of the favorable matchups. As most of you know, we are in playoff, deep into the playoffs in most fantasy leagues, if your league is not got to the Super Bowl yet. We had our Super Bowl here at the Balance Radio Network. I was in the Super Bowl. One Michelle Jones was not because, well, she wanted to do it all herself. And, you know, keep playing Eli Manning, keep playing Eli Manning. Well, the Giants have had an okay season, Jeff, but from a fantasy perspective, not so hot. So I want to talk about some of the Week 15 favorable matchups and kind of get into our buy-sell trade. Obviously, we're going to have to combine those situations, and we're going to talk about some favorable matchups. Quarterback I like, we're just going to start off. And you know what? I'll be the first guy to eat a piece of humble pie. I was not on that Andrew Luck bandwagon. I thought RG3 was the better match for us. I also said, don't pick up Andrew Luck for your fantasy football league. I'll be the first guy to say that I said it here on the balance not to do it. Well, I'm changing my tune. Guys, if you're still you're still going with your fantasy football, Andrew Luck versus Houston, I don't know. I like this matchup, Jeff. Hopefully his down day against the Titans. Wow, he was probably sore on Monday after that game. What are your thoughts? Is this a favorable matchup for Andrew Luck?
In this particular week, I don't think it is because I think Houston will be hungry to rebound from that 42-14 shellacking they took at the hands of the Patriots. I know that Luck is playing back in his hometown. He grew up in Houston, I believe, so he'll have a lot of friends and family there. I think that the Texans defense, though, will be out to kind of right their ship. So I think it's a tough, unfavorable matchup this week.
Well, all I know is if you're a friend or family of Andrew Luck, he's already said here on local media, don't expect to see me, don't expect free tickets, all of that good stuff. He's a business trip for him. He's only going to be there 48 hours, and he is completely focused on that. So, you know, if we can look at one thing real quickly with Andrew Luck, it's an eerie resemblance to Peyton Manning. And just his focus point, just you don't have to worry about him being out at night, out at the clubs, doing things. He's a steadier of the game, much like Peyton Manning. So hopefully that is a good thing for us. Obviously, huge matchup for the Indianapolis Colts. I think it's a good matchup, favorable. Jeff doesn't necessarily agree, but that's okay. We move on. Josh Freeman, Tampa Bay against New Orleans. I like Josh Freeman. He's a popular start this week. I think a lot of people are starting. If you look at the trending, he dropped 420 yards and three touchdowns on the Saints back in week 7, and no team has allowed more fantasy points to quarterbacks than New Orleans this season. So Josh Freeman against New Orleans. Is this a good matchup for fantasy owners?
Yeah, I think it is, Tom. I agree with you. The Saints defense is garbage. Freeman should have a big game. You mentioned the previous matchup. He had kind of a subpar outing last week, but I think he'll rebound, and New Orleans hasn't been able to stop anybody all year. I don't think that trend's going to change tomorrow.
Well, and I absolutely agree. So my other quarterback here, Carson Palmer. Yeah, the former Bengal, Carson Palmer. When he went to Oakland after sitting on his couch, I kind of laughed. I kind of chuckled. But I tell you what, the garbage point man posted a respectable 18-point fantasy day against the Chiefs earlier this year. Thanks to a pair of touchdown throws, Kansas City has allowed 10 multi-touchdown games in 13 games, which has propelled it to the sixth best fantasy matchup for the opposing quarterback in 2012. Carson Palmer has a great game tomorrow against Kansas City.
I agree with you. He's the kind of guy that will throw for 400 yards and three or four touchdowns and probably have a couple untimely interceptions there. But against the Kansas City defense, that has been woeful as well, I think that's a good matchup. So I would buy.
Well, let's go ahead and go on over to our running backs, who I like. Pick up and buy Reggie Bush, Miami. Yes, the same Reggie Bush that used to be with the Saints. His 19 touchdowns last week against a tough 49ers, as we talked about earlier, front gives us hope that he'll be heavily involved in a much friendlier matchup with the Jaguars, who have allowed him the third most fantasy points the position this season. So, Reggie Bush, buy, sell, or trade, favorable matchup.
Yeah, I think I would buy. I think that Bush has quietly put together a very strong season and is a playmaker, and again, that's a favorable matchup against a Jacksonville defense that gives up a lot of yardage and a lot of points.
Well, let's look at Ryan Matthews over in San Diego, the Charger versus Carolina. Obviously, Cam Newton's putting together a great string of wins. We didn't get a chance to talk about the Panthers and Cam Newton in the NFC talk earlier, but a meeting with the sixth best running back matchup of 2012 puts Matthews, who ran the ball 25 times for 65 yards against the Steelers, stout running defense in week 14, back to running back consideration. I think he's at least at best a number two running back for if you're looking for an alternate running back, or perhaps you're dealing with an injury issue. Ryan Matthews is a good pickup.
Yeah, I agree with you as well. That game is going to be probably a pretty high scoring affair. Matthews is going to get a lot of touches. Carolina has sustained a lot of injuries to their front seven all year, so they're playing with a lot of second string and backup people. So I think that you could see a steady diet of Ryan Matthews getting the ball, and that probably bodes well. So I would buy as well there.
Well, let's talk about Darren McFadden, the Oakland Raiders, Darren McFadden versus Kansas City. Again, we've already talked about how weak Kansas City Chiefs are doing. The ankle injury he suffered in the Denver game is apparently a non-issue, according to him. Of course, that's what they always say. But that's great news for his owners, fantasy owners, who is considering, since he has a game with the Chiefs, as well, 26-ranked rushing defense this weekend, 131 yards per game, 4.6 yards per carry. Great pickup, favorable matchup, Darren McFadden.
I'm going to preface my comments with saying I really like McFadden, but he is so brittle. When he's healthy and on, you know, I don't think that there are too many better running backs in the league as far as production and just his running style and big play ability. But when he's nicked up, He's a guy that can put the ball on the ground and could go out in the first quarter and you won't see him the rest of the game. I would be cautious, but I would say buy in a very conservative manner there.
And here's another guy I'm not really a big fan of off the field. Hey, look at me, Mr. Chris Johnson. I am the best that ever was. Pay homage to me. What do you mean? You do not owe me gazillions of dollars. But if you're a fantasy owner, go ahead and pick him up this week against the Jets. If Jacksonville's fourth running streak running defense against Montel Owens was capable of exploiting the Jets' shoddy run defense for 16 fantasy points last weekend, you'd like to see Chris Johnson or CJ to be able to at least find similar success against the seventh best fantasy matchup for running backs. Chris Johnson, what are your thoughts?
You know, on paper, that looks like a good matchup, and you would think buy, no doubt. I just have reservations about Chris Johnson, his productivity, his attitude. I don't like that matchup this week because the Jets, strange as it may seem, they are still in the playoff hunt, and that's the kind of game that they might shut him down, and he goes into the tank pretty easily. So I would be wary and probably sell there.
Well, essence of time, I'm just going to go through these and make notes if you want, and we're going to go into some of my unfavorable matchups to sell and get rid of. Josh Gordon, I'm the only guy with the Cleveland Browns that can play. Vince Jackson, Tampa Bay. Marquise Colston, New Orleans. Give me the ball. I can score. Come on, Drew. We had some good times. Steve Smith with Carolina. Go ahead and pick him up. Tight ends, I like. Pitna with Baltimore. Bennett with the Giants. And, of course, with the defense. Guys, Detroit, this is a good week to play Detroit. Let's go ahead and let's look at some of my unfavorable quarterback matchups. I don't even know what to use the name colon when it comes to quarterback in fantasy, but we got to with the San Francisco 49ers. Do not pick up colon Kaepernick. Let's just say don't pick up your colon and you're good to go, Jeff.
he has been streaky and up and down. I'm not sure that they really have that quarterback situation figured out, whether it's Kaepernick or Alex Smith. I would be leery. He has been inconsistent, as you would expect, as a first-time starter, so I would probably sell there.
Well, I wish how about Tony Romo? I don't like him against Pittsburgh. Yeah, buy, sell, or trade on him.
No, I sell, too, because I think the Steelers are going to rebound and come up with a big victory on the road.
Well, I hit fast forward for a particular reason so I could get to this guy. I don't like him against with Green Bay. Alex Green versus Chicago. Green has looked a little bit more. I just don't like him. And I wouldn't trust him in this game against Chicago. So I'm going to guess that you're going to agree with me on this. Don't play Alex Green against Chicago.
Yeah, I'm biased, but I think the Bears are going to shut down their running game tomorrow. So I would definitely not take advantage of Green. Sell.
Well, guys, that brings us to our two-minute warning. Mr. Jeff Kurtz, we're going to give you a one-minute rant. Rant whatever about whatever you want. Doomsday, Christmas, the Bears, anything you want to rant about, go ahead, go.
Well, I appreciate the time, Tom. Appreciate being on with your listeners. I want to wish everybody a Merry Christmas and a Happy 2013. You know, it's the time of the year when I always get a little sentimental, and Christmas is a great time to spend with your family and friends, but also think about others who might be less fortunate. And in the weeks leading up to the holiday, maybe there's something that you can do as a good deed in the community, whether it's volunteering or whether it's just helping somebody in need or just maybe saying an extra thank you to someone who provides a service and kind of is under the radar but is always there for you. Take time out, cherish your time with your family and friends, and try to do a nice deed for somebody else, whether it's around you immediately, in your workplace, or in your community. And sports is always the great toy factory, kind of gets us away from the real-life problems and issues that we have each day, and certainly we have enough of those, but it's a great diversion, and it's a great time of the year as the NFL playoff races really come into play, and you've got college football bowl games and college hoops all running together, and then the NBA is up and running as well. So I'm thankful for another fun year in sports, and all the camaraderie and good times it's brought us, and hope to have be a part of the show and be talking with everyone and blogging and just the interaction going into the next year. It promises to be another interesting one.
Jeff Kurtz of Bear Claws. Jeff, we appreciate you joining us. Well, I'll tell you what, my one-minute rant is just going to be this, guys. As I said at the beginning of this show, a tragedy in Connecticut. Hug your children. It's so close to Christmas. Children love Christmas. You know, Friday afternoon, the Newton Public School District homepage remained sprinkled with fragile snowflakes and the end-of-semester activities. The only note that the page even had anything to do with the shooting was just a brief thing that the afternoon kindergarten had canceled. Kindergarten was canceled, as was the daily routine of all of our lives yesterday. As an early relief about apparently shooting at a shooting in Newton, Connecticut, Sandy Hook's elementary unfolded, the horror of 26 dead, 20 of them children at this K-4 campus. The story is all more sickening in its familiarities. Again and again, those who were interviewed said, this is a nice town, this is a safe place, this thing doesn't happen here. Just like they said after Columbine, after Virginia Tech, after a war, and the list goes on and on. After too many incidents or to list or even remember. Again, we hear of a family of a heavily armed and man dressed in black of strict security measures supposedly in place of stories of regular folks who vaulted into life-saving heroics. The school's principal and other staffers are among the dead in this western Connecticut town. Yet it is difficult to think about anything beyond those youngest victims, children between the ages of 5 and 10, little children who most certainly had visions of sugar plum dancing in their heads and thoughts of winter break just 1 week away, pulling their attention away from their studies, children already looking forward to the day's final bell, the signal, a weekend of holiday parties, parades, and pictures with Santa. Instead, the youngsters were abruptly wrenched from their high spirits by staff pushing them with their eyes closed, in some cases past bodies and pools of blood. Safety seems to be a relative word in crushing the aftermath of what these children witnessed. And what the parents of those dead are suffering now, not to mention the families of the adult victims, this is what happened in the midst of the holiday season, only makes it all the worse. It will be a long time before those of us who watched this story unfold, who saw the twisted horror and the faces of escaping students and the heartbreak of the faces of their parents, will feel any kindling of holiday spirit. For now, we just must humbly ask each other, when will this end? Say a prayer this weekend for the Connecticut shooting. God bless America. Merry Christmas. We'll see you guys in 2 weeks.